Blog Talk Radio. And peace and greetings, family. I'm Brother Ezekiel Hill. And welcome to December. December is the month we're going to the winding down to December 21st when we start rebirth again. So each day is getting a little shorter. But what I want to do is, since it's December, I want to start off with a little poetry piece to encapsulate the month of December and the guests that I'm bringing in. For the guests that I'm bringing in, including Brother Lester Love, who's trying to deal with spirit and getting us in line with, let's look at, after December 21st, we're in the age of Aquarius, and we're looking at being metaphysical and aligning to a new paradigm, you know, and position ourselves in accordance with where we're at in the universe, and we can receive this energy. And the piece goes, it's entitled, When We Let Spirit Lead Us. When we let spirit lead us, is it impossible to know where we're being led? All we know, all we can believe, all we can hope is that we're going home. That wherever spirit takes us is where we live. And I thought it was important because I got Brother Lester Loving. Are you there, Brother Lester Loving?
Absolutely.
Peace. We got you. Yeah, and Lester Loving's family is kicking it out to with like getting your environment together, and we're looking at survival, and we're looking at news, and definitely, family, don't look at CNN. It's cool, but go do some global news. Go listen to Russian news and French news so you can put them both together and get an idea of what's really going on this planet that's opposed to where we're going on the Ring of Stone Network. So tonight, with Brother Lester Loving, is going to give you some 101 tips and some other things in his heart in terms of getting you prepared that if the electricity go off, you don't have to panic. Brother Lester Loving, you know, welcome back to the Ring of Stone Network.
Thank you. Actually, it's a pleasure to be back at this time of the year and to be sharing about this subject.
You know, and where do we go? Where do we start? You know, for me, it's starting at what if you don't have power? What do you do? Is there some basic shortcuts that one can do to keep you from panicking? And how do people deal with not panicking?
First of all, you're talking to me, okay? So therefore, I do not use or endorse the concept of shortcuts.
Okay.
We have to put the time, the energy, and the beingness into making and establishing our connection. Once we put our effort into doing and achieving that, the idea of panic is over. It's just a matter of what are the steps and what do you mean by that, Lester? Well, and I'll get into that, but in other words, if I'm going to build a house, you know, I'm going to spend as much time planning to build the house as I am actually building the house. So if I put very little energy into the planning and then I start to build the house, that's where the panic comes in.
Yeah, and this is true. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to, like we discussed, give them some one-on-ones, because right now, just imagine right now we're in a position, the same point that if a disaster happened, our people would be like, no creativity. We haven't been taught any industrial arts in school. They took it out. So then, just go wait at the Unidome. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, our thing is, when we finish tonight, you know, you can wait at the Unidome or you can just go listen to Lester and get some practical things. And I agree with you, you should be practicing because, you know, I'm a person that, you know, that if you don't believe it, you know, at when it comes crunch time, you're just going to panic. You know, and I've seen it. You know what I mean? I've been on canoeing trips and camping trips, you know, and we lost food and lost canoes and oars, and the people that weren't MacGyvers,
uh-huh. You
know, they were paying. And I use the word MacGyver because, that, you know, MacGyver, that program, that dude just used anything that he could touch to be creative for survival, you know, and it could get to that, you know, in
that,
America.
That is our organic natural state. I mean, because I say that because the animals are all like that. You know, they don't let one thing stop them, or the water hole's dried up. They don't like panic. They move on. They figure something else out. You know. Now I just want to. I just before I get to the advice part of this conversation, because everybody wants to know what to do. Okay, I first want to establish a foundation in terms of, use the word metaphysical, okay? For most of our activities, the metaphysical part is at tops 3% of what we do. But it's the most energetic part of what we do, and therefore we need to spend some time with that before we get into the physical part. Now, anybody that's heard me speak before knows that I always start with, you know, looking at the word and, finding out what, you know, how the word is defined. So when we look at the word disaster is Greek, and it comes from two words, disastra, which means away from the stars. So what the Greeks meant when they said that is, if you're not paying attention to what is above, then you're going to have problems because you're not able to align with what is above to what is below. And therefore, by definition, we're already in disaster, brother. Like, you know, people keep telling me, well, wait till the disaster comes. We're in disaster already. We have turned away from the stars. We have turned away from the cosmic pattern. I don't give a rat's patoot, as the old people used to say, about stocks and, you know, Lexus and all that other stuff. You know, we need a underlying foundational set of principles which are long-lasting and consistent. All this other stuff is very, very stars and the cosmos is the blueprint, the template, the pattern from which we need to realign ourselves. And all the ancient peoples, you know, understood this and worked as hard as they possibly could to get into that alignment. They had different levels of success, but they all worked toward it. So having said that, and of course, you know, I get into a lot of issues with people because they want to tell me that science doesn't have the answers, or science is invalid, and we have to stick with spirit. Science is spirit. So we just want to look at what the science part, of spirit tells us, and the science part meaning the science part of spirit is that which we can measure or have measured. Okay, the other part of spirit is that which is not measured, whether it has not yet been measured or whether it's unmeasurable. But they both work together. So when we examine what modern science has found out, they have uncovered the fact, or the data, I'm not going to say the fact, the data, that starting in the heart of our universe is something which they have described as akin to a drum beat. And that drum beat permeates throughout our entire physical realm. And it organizes all the matter and subatomic particles that we see and that we don't see. So just imagine there's some brother, you know, with a conga drum or a series of brothers and sisters with drums, and they're drumming. And this drumming organizes all the patterns that we see and the stuff that we can't see, because there's lots of dark matter. You know, for all the stars that Hubble can see, there's a lot more stuff out there that we can't even see. Okay, but all of that is organized by this drumming type pattern. And the scientific term for that is coupled oscillation. Okay, I'm starting here simply because people keep looking for a way to get, you know, to organize all this stuff. If things were just sane, if things were just organized, if things were just, you know, back to the way they used to be, they've never changed. We're the ones who have deviated. We're the ones who turned away from the stars and the drum beat. So the first of survival and survival strategy is to spend a certain amount of time every day energizing the alignment of getting back to that coupled oscillation or that universal drum beat. For those of you who are skeptical, and I love skeptics, okay, you can look it up in Scientific American, because this was measured, I believe it was 20 years ago, so they've known about this for quite some time. And but once again, I'm not here to validate or
please. You know what? Actually, I was getting ready to interview you. Just deal. Don't let's not. We're beyond trying to prove to people to stop us from getting the information out. Just mm-hmm. get your information out. You know, because they did that to Ivor Van Sertima and some other people. And you know, we don't need their validation to exist. So just go and deal. You know, and then show us the rhythm of it. Give us the 101 of the rhythm of that particular, you know, drum beat and like that. And, you know, hey, we'll leave them in our wake. You see what I mean? And that's what we want to do. This is.
Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that we need to spend a certain amount of our day in some form, some exercise that helps us to align with this drum beat. Now, some people use prayer. Some people use meditation. Trance dancing is also very good. Yoga and breathing are essential. But the key is that we need to do whatever exercise it is for a minimum of 20 minutes for it to lock into our entire cellular system. So whether we do this in the morning or the evening or the middle of the day, the 20-minute period is dedicated to get back in alignment with the energy that energy which is holding all those systems together. So that's where I would start. In addition, of course, and see, it's going to take me a while to get to the disaster part, but in addition, I believe, well, it doesn't matter what I believe, most people are dehydrated. And they're dehydrated for several reasons, one of which is that the average diet has an excess of sugar and or salt, not even counting the chemicals that are in it. And so, therefore, it's not a matter of drinking the water, but it's also a matter of purifying and energizing or programming the water for that which is our daily needs. A lot of people, they read Dr. Emoto's work, and other people who've done this research, and they put all these lofty goals into the water, universal oneness, be aligned with my brothers and whatever. And And I say program it for your daily function. If you have an extra heavy-duty assignment at work that day, then you program that water. You put your hands around, you rub your hands together first to energize them. You put your hands around your container, and you say in the name of, and you name whatever your universal nomenclature is, and you say, I call upon those forces which will help me to get through this with grace and dignity and have the energy that I need to come out the other end stronger than I came through. You know, may I get the kind of income that I truly deserve. May I meet glowing and helpful people on the way to work. May I have enough energy to do my job completely and efficiently, and may I get back home where I can rest and recharge myself for the next assignment, meaning the next day. Now, there are many, many methods of purifying water. And there are many aspects to energizing and purifying water. One of the simpler ways is simply taking a wrapped quartz crystal. When I say wrapped, I mean you get a piece of copper wire, you coil it around the sides of the crystal, starting from the point going back to the base. You wrap it a minimum of 7 times. You secure it. And you secure it around the piece that's, you know, pointing away from the crystal. So, like, you leave 3 or 4 inches sticking down from the crystal. That allows you to hang that crystal into your drinking water. And before you use it the first time, you want to program that crystal with all of the things that you're trying to achieve. And as I said, we always want to include that coupled oscillation in whatever we do, that we stay aligned, that we stay aligned with the universal drumbeat. This also helps with overcoming panic, because the word panic comes from the god Pan, and the idea is that there's some force in nature or some outside thing that startles us and upsets us, that we feel that it can overcome us. And the fact of the matter is that everything is aligned. We just have to work with it. Many of the times, the things that seem to be out of alignment are just they're just exercises to get us to use more of our energy to focus to change it over so that we take it from the negative, that which is not serving us fully, to the positive, that which is serving us fully and allows us to serve the universe fully. So and you put the quartz crystal into the water. You want to hang it over the edge of whatever your container is. I prefer that the crystal hang down toward the middle of the container. You don't want it to go to the bottom, because you want the water to be able to circulate completely around the crystal. And you let it hang there for 3 or 4 hours with the top off. Now, a lot of people are worried that dust and all kinds of other stuff are going to get into the water, but that's not true. The quartz crystal, through the scientific process known as dissociation, is going to push the water, the atoms of the water, to start moving. And the longer water moves, the quicker it is able to purify itself, meaning to break down those negative things and to energize itself. Now, the word energize is another one of those words, because what do people mean when they say energize? You know, it means that the water is gaining in electrical capacity. There's more electrons and electron voltage going through that water, which can then be transferred to our system when we drink it. Now it's very easy. It's very easy to display this to oneself, because all you have to do is get 2 containers of water, you know, just let one sit, and put the quartz crystal in the other and just water your plants with it. See if you notice difference between the non-quartz one and the quartz one. I also recommend this not just as a scientific experiment, because the quartz crystal is something that you can carry in your pocket no matter where you go. If you have to leave your environment very quickly, if some natural disaster happens, you know, you're not going to be able to pack your Brita filter or your Kangen machine, but you can take your quartz crystals with you, and that's very easy to carry around with you. I also believe that we need to start being stewards of the earth. And by stewards of the earth, I mean we should not be waiting for disasters. That part of the water that we purify, we should be putting into the rivers near us. We should be pouring it down the drain, pouring it in our toilet bowl, because that water will take some of the bacteria and microbes away from those environments. Particularly the lime buildup will be more readily broken down if you use the quartz crystal in your water. So it takes a while. It's slow. It's not like Drano that, you know, instantly, you know, goes down there and rests it out. But you don't have to worry if you put your head over there that you're going to get this toxic stuff in your nose either, you know. So water I consider to be an essential part of staying in alignment, and also something that we need to think about in terms of if we have to deal with, as you said, survival methods and disaster. In regard to that, you know, people talk to me all the time about survival, you know, and survival methods, you know, survival techniques, and what do we do? Well, one of the things we need to do right now, not waiting until something happens, is we need to have an exit plan from wherever we live, and that exit plan should have demarcated spots where there is available water from where we're leaving to where we're going to end up. So it's not just efficient enough to say, well, I'm living in New York, but I know this place in the Catskills that has, you know, fresh running water, and I got a cabin up there. You're going to need water along the way, you know. You need water to bathe with. You need water to, you know, to clean your pots and pans, or to, you know, clean your tools and your utensils. You know, it's not reasonable to think that we're going to carry water on our back, because water is 8 pounds a gallon. You know, for 10 gallons is 80 pounds. That's not really that doable in terms of carrying with us. So, we need to have spots along the way. And all of this is like what I said from the beginning, planning to build the house. Okay? You know, everybody always looks at the end result, like I'm going to the Catskills. Well, you know, what are we going to do along the way? And so I consider water to be a key component of what we need to do now, as well as what we need to do when we get to this spot. Because energized water helps to quicken our intuition. When I first started investigating science, one of the reasons why I resisted science is because the way it was presented to me in school and in these textbooks is that these people had these ideas and all they had to do was go into the lab and test them out and, you know, hone it down and hone it down, and eventually they come up with the answer. But once I actually started doing science myself, the actual nuts and bolts of experimentation and, you know, when I'd read about Newton, or Einstein even, Maxwell Clark, or, any of these people who made great innovations, one of the things that shocked me at first was the fact that 70% of all scientific leaps and advancements comes from intuition. And it's a scientifically known fact that intuition is the greatest key to science. So having purified and energized water a manner and a way of keeping that intuition sharp and keeping, you know, what do you want to call it, spidey senses, or, you know, your back echo thing, or your sharp electro sensing, whatever metaphor you want to use, it is important that we have that intuition on a day-to-day, moment-to-moment basis, not just in emergencies, but, you know, all around the clock. If we practice it with the small things, when it comes time for the big things, it'll be just as easy.
Yeah, my whole thing has been temporary. You know, I've been looking at portable solar. I've been looking at the military reverse osmosis machine, which is on the trailer. You know, so
okay.
I've been looking at some dome homes, but I've been looking at other temporary structures that if folks have to meet. And it's interesting because when you go spiritual, I've been monitoring some of my friends, and, you know, some of us are lacking sleep. And so I called one of my friends that's an international psychic. We were discussing it yesterday. Was it that we were overworked or stressed? Or was there something happening in the universe? And she ended up saying that our spirits are expecting something to transpire. So she was like, continue to prepare because our spirits are expecting something. That they know ahead. Our spirit know ahead of time that there's some major change coming. I'm not going to say it's a disaster because when you said it, I thought about it. You know, and maybe it's not a disaster. It's just a shift for us to get in line with the new energy that's coming in, based on the position in the universe.
Okay,
so,
once again, I would not say it that way. Okay, that is it. I endorse what your friend is saying, but we once again have to take responsibility and take the time to get the rest that we need. It's not just about society. It's not about any of these other things. It's about the fact that we have to allot the time. You know, I see people all the time who are doggedly tired, and they just keep pushing themselves for that almighty dollar or to get that next thing, you know, to make it to that next thing. And I'm like, your body and your consciousness is telling you, you know, lay your butt down, you know. I'm not talking about tired, just tired in the sense of human activity. You know, the survey tells us that, for example, New York City, people commute the longest to and from work in a day. You know, the average New Yorker travels 2.5 hours to get to and from work. So if they're working 8 hours, that's another 2.5 hours. That's 10.5 hours that they're devoting to their job. Now, most people say, I work for 8 hours. No, you're working 10.5 hours just to do that function. That's not counting getting up, washing yourself, having some kind of food, having the food that you need after work, and then my favorite word that everybody uses, decompressing. Okay, if we actually add all that up, we're not getting enough rest. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about on the cellular level, all things, all atoms and all cells go through 4 stages of energization. The 4 stages of activity. The first one is called activation or energization. That's when it starts to get energy. The second one is acceleration, okay? That means it's starting to spin quicker. The third one, peak or orgasmic state. That means it's at the top, you know, it can't take in anymore. It's going to release that accumulated energy. And the fourth state is rest. And of those 4 states, the most important and the one that charges us the most is the rest state. The way that our society works is that they constantly, and I'm going to use this word, pimp and promote the activation and the acceleration state without the orgasmic and rest state. So we're in a constant state of agitation because we're not getting the proper amount of release, and more important than the release is the actual rest state that brings in, you know, the settling down, getting that cell or that atom back to where it can be, that it can start to pick up energy again. The interesting thing about this is if the human cell is not completely rested, meaning it does not have the rest that it needs, if you put nutrition into your body and your cell is not rested, that nutrition will go into that cell and the cell will push it out without digesting it. Or a lot of times, if it's not properly rested, it will not even allow that nutrition to go in. That's how important rest is. So what I'm saying is I'm not disagreeing with the brother or sister who said that, but we have some degree of control over this. Every time I see people eating in a car going somewhere, I'm like, no, pull over. I don't mean every time pull over, but, you know, sit, relax, breathe. Take in the nutrition that you're doing. And by nutrition, I don't just mean the food. I mean, you know, I see people, they got their TV on, they got a computer on, they're doing a third thing, they're talking, you know, they're texting somebody. That is not the situation of going through that cycle properly. So we have some control over controlling the rest in the rest cycle that we need to go through. And in addition to that, the various things that we have in our environment, because you said I was going to talk about environment, you know, our television, our computer, our refrigerator, our fluorescent lights, the copying machine, the washing machine and dryer, you know, all these things are generating positive ions. And if you have more positive ions than negative ions, your body is not going to get the kind of rest, one's body is not going to get the kind of rest that is necessary for full, sustained activity. And not so much hearing or appreciating or hearing or taking in a couple of oscillations, but being able to use that energy and appreciate it. And the word appreciate means to make greater in value. All these people that are talking about metaphysics, they're all about gaining spirit, but we're supposed to take in spirit and increase it. It's supposed to, when it comes out of us, we're supposed to let off more energy than we take in. Not just take in. This is not a bank, okay? This is a loan where we're supposed to take in that energy and make it greater in value. Just like in the Bible, they talk about the story about the talent. You know, we're supposed to take in that energy and make it greater, more abundant, more useful, more energized. And that extra energy is what we share with the people in the environment around us. Okay? Now, people said to me for many, many years, son, you're bugging. Okay? The second law of thermodynamics says, you know, you can't let off more energy than you take in. You know, I'm like, okay, except that when I read a little more closely, what it actually said was energy systems taking energy and let off less than what it takes in. Passive energy systems taking energy and let off more than they take in. So a perfect example of that, of course, is one I use all the time, photosynthesis, where the plant takes in sunlight, trace elements, and water, and the combination of all of that, it produces C6H12O6, which is your basic carbohydrate, and the amount of energy, and it also lets off oxygen during the daytime. Okay. when the plant lets off this energy, it uses 0.001 1% for itself. Let's just make it simple. It's using less than 1% to run its entire operation. It's giving off 99% of what it took in to help its environment, to help the other plants, to help the animals that are passing through, to help the microbes and, you know, the little invisible people that live on the topsoil, you know, and other beings. So right there, there's our example that it not only can be done, but it's done all the time directly in front of us. So the idea that, you know, I have to wait to get rich to give back, you know, I have to get forward. You know, I just, you know, as soon as I make it big, I'm going to get forward. That's an ill concept, okay? That's a Western, modern, capitalist concept. We need to start thinking in terms of, well, once again, not believing anything I'm saying, but testing this stuff out. I say this not in a scientific sense of getting a meter and testing it out. I'm talking about emotionally, trying it out and see if you feel better. Because the fact that you're giving off more than you're taking in also is another means of eliminating that panic.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. I'll just leave any comments before I, you know.
Let's turn it back then, because I want to get to a certain point, so I want to turn it back. Why did you get into survival? And give me your explanation from metaphysical and then your explanation of why you got into survival from a tangible perspective.
I'm sorry, just ask the question. I didn't hear the first part. You said,
why did you get into survival? Where are you at now? Why did you begin it? At the point where you began it, why did you begin it there? And I want to know the metaphysical component and the physical component.
See, once again, people use the word metaphysical, okay? I got into this because when I was 7 years old, my grandma Cindy walked to the front door of my house. And even though there was a door, she was in the vestibule, and there was a door between us, and I was at the other end of the house, I could already feel her aura. And I was like, what is that? And she came in, she was 89 years old, and she sat me on her lap one day. She told my mother, little Lester's going to school today. And my mother said, okay. She sat me on her knee and she said, listen, the Native Americans taught me everything they knew, or I learned everything that they taught me about herbs, roots, medicine and fresh food, and I'm going to impart this data and knowledge to you. And then she proceeded to go in the backyard, you know, get some soil, some topsoil, some farming tools, and proceed to get the ground ready. She spent 10 years training me. She came every year till she was 99 years old. This is in Brooklyn, New York. So I grew, not me personally, but me, my mother, and my grandma Cindy grew food for 10 years. And it's not the food. It was the fact that an elder was spending time and sharing with me everything that she had gleaned from the cosmos. Now I'm going to address what you said about the metaphysics. When, of course, I did this, and it blew my mind on every level, the things she was showing me, the freshness of the food, how we took, you know, a backyard that was mostly used for gardens and was suddenly bursting with abundance. You know, she did broadcast seeding. She didn't do nice rows. You know, she just threw the stuff out there and let it grow, saw what came up. She didn't eliminate the weaker ones, she didn't just keep the ones that were growing the fastest. She taught me to let everything grow, and the ones that didn't grow as quickly, you put them aside in an environment or in an area that got more sunlight so they can grow as well, you know. So that taught me that I could have a double harvest. Now, the metaphysical part of it was the fact that seeing this and it blowing my mind, I went to school for the science project and did a report about the effect of planting during the different phases of the moon. And everybody else had their science project. I'd done my charts. I measured everything. I kept notes. I measured how much water I gave to each thing. And when the judges came around, they refused to even accept my experiment as being valid. They gave me a zero. And so I had to make a choice. Either I had to say, well, Grandma Cindy was wrong, which would mean I had to ignore my feelings, or I had to look for other answers and keep going. And that's where the metaphysical part came in. There was a part of me that got overwhelmed. There was this bubble inside of me that bubbled up and said, son, keep going. Ignore these people. They don't have a backyard. They don't know. So I went, and lo and behold, I ran into this thing called the Farmer's Almanac. I started reading about other cultures, and everybody throughout time knew that there was a connection between the moon and gardening. You know, there's a definite connection between the moon and the volume of dirt. That if I dig a hole at the new moon and I dig a hole at the full moon, there's going to be a greater volume of soil at the full moon. And if I dig up the same exact volume of soil, there will be greater volume at the full moon than the new moon. So I saw metaphysical principles that I couldn't fully understand, but I could see the result. And so that taught me to trust in the fact that there's a connection between the visible world or the visible forces and the non-visible forces. That was the motivation. And then that just spilled over into everything else.
Thank you, because I needed that, because my question, you know, when people feel that the shift is coming,
mm-hmm.
you know, it started from their foundation, their core, you know, like, for me, it started in 89, you know, now it's kind of, you know, culminating where I feel it. Now, a better description of what they're saying is like, did you ever see the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
Love it. Yes, of course.
And that's kind of like the feeling that we're starting to get. Exactly. You know how, okay, and I'm a mute because my daughter's here, but it's not a matter of them lack of sleep, but it's like that hint. You know how all of them start building and writing pictures of this mountain and,
mm-hmm.
and the clay, and we're starting to get that energy projected upon them.
That's
she was trying to say. And I'm going to yield for a minute. My daughter's here.
Well, see, once again, remember I started out by saying that there's this coupled oscillation or this drum beat permeating the entire universe. Okay? Well, in the movie Close Encounters, you know, the guy who was going around the world, the French guy, you know, who's, you know, they come to India, they go to the Gobi Desert, they go out west, they go to all these different places, and all these people are, you know, doing this, right? Remember that?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, the tones, okay? Well, guess what those tones are the equivalent of? You've seen the movie several times. I know you have.
Okay? Yeah, I definitely have. Definitely.
Okay,
yeah,
those
definitely.
Tones, my brother, is A-E-I-O-U.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't say uh-huh. The Egyptians taught us that the vowels are the tones of creation. And therefore, you know, we must spend time tapping into, opening ourselves up to tap into that calling. that specific oscillation that is not just universal, but that will lead us to what we're supposed to do. You know, not everybody's supposed to be into quote unquote science. You know, as far as I'm concerned, everything's science. But you know, it might be the science of cooking. Some might be the science of healing. Some will be the science of law. So others will be the science of taking care of the soil. But we have to let these tones, these feelings, and these emotions lead us to where our chosen place, where we fit in to the cosmos. I think I said this on the last show, but I'm going to say it again because it's worth repeating. It's worth repeating for the rest of my life. Okay? I was looking through my mother's medical book, and it said that every cell in the human body is a receiver and transmitter of radio frequency. That means that radio waves go into our cells, get absorbed by our cells, and come out of our cells and go other places. Years later, I'm looking through a book about geology, and it said that even though the Earth looks round, actual plate structure of the planet is a dodecahedron, a 12-sided object that has a dodecahedron is made of 12 pentagons, okay? And you can find this, and if you look hard enough, you can find this in a science book. And it said that one of the functions of a dodecahedron is that it is a broadcaster, a transmitter, and receiver of radio waves. What that means in the most basic manner is that every cell of every living thing on this planet is in communication with every cell of every other living thing on this planet. We don't have to work for it. It's already in effect. So, you know, we just have to spend the time to tap into it. And just as you said, I'm so glad you mentioned Close Encounters, because I don't care how much, you know, I thought I was bugging until I ran into other people who were climbing that mountain or had the same drawings, you know, that met up. And then it was like, okay, either we're all bugging or there's something to this. And that's what society is not necessarily going to promote or encourage us, is to trust those feelings and those tones, those motivations that we get. Okay, it's up to us to know that that's what it is. And also, it very much takes the family unit in order to keep those connections strong. Not just the nuclear family, you know, the father, mother, and the kids, but what they call the extended family, you know, the grandparents, the aunties and the uncles. And then other just neighbors, you know, that we need to have in the environment, because once again, and I just finished saying that I started off with agronomy, which is, you know, the science of not only the growing the food, but also the soil and the water and the sunlight and all of those things, the trace elements. Well, you know, in agronomy, they teach that when the environment has all the elements that it needs for that plant or that organism, growth is instantaneous. Growth is instantaneous. So therefore, part of that stewardship that I talked about before is taking some time, not just from, you know, not just my own agenda, my own personal immediate agenda, but realizing by energizing my environment, not just the soil, that's part of it, but the neighbors around me, the people I see on the elevator every day, you know, energizing them, because that's part of my own growth. You know, that's a necessary part of keeping everything in balance and, you know, not just, you know, going out of your comfort zone. If you see somebody, you know, doing something like, you know, New York City, where I live, I see young people going down the street and pulling tree limbs off the tree. You know, and I would go right up to them and I say, excuse me, do you realize that thing is alive just like you are? Do you realize that it functions to, you know, to keep, to regulate the temperature of this street? That by you pulling those limbs off, that you're potentially raising the temperature, and therefore, you know, people will have to turn up their air conditioners and use more electricity. Well, first of all, the thing is alive, and will probably outlive us. So, you know, people talk about respect to elders. The trees are one thing right there that we should be thinking about and understanding. You know, we've got to have, we've got to reestablish our connection with nature, or the nature. You know, it's you know, the word physics means, it mean has two meanings. It means the nature of something, the atomic structures and whatever, but also means the nature of it, meaning what functions does it perform. You know, and in order for me to understand fully what my functions are, I have to understand the functions of the things in my environment. You know, it's a full education. Education isn't just what happens at school. I'm really bored to tears hearing people talk about, well, the educational system doesn't teach our kids. That is not the educational system. The educational system starts once they get out of school. You know, walking the kids home and pointing out the various things along the way, taking them out of town every once in a while and showing them where the animals live and how they live and the fact that things live outdoors, you know, and there's different ways of not only surviving, as you talk about, but thriving. And how is it that they can live year-round, you know, with just their coat, you know? Why is it that they can, you know, eat the food, you know, the stuff around them and are healthy? You know, if something's coming in a plastic, you know, in a plastic container, I don't see any animals eating stuff from a plastic container. You know, the container that they eat is either a shell from a nut or the skin of a fruit or, you know, just the blade of grass, you know, and we need to just, I'm not saying for everybody to go organic. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying for us to be fully involved, 360 senses of being engaged with nature. The more we appreciate our immediate environment, the more we'll appreciate our role in it, and we'll also connect with other environments, both interterrestrially and extraterrestrially.
So the question is how? How do we, what do we, right here on the network, what can we give the one-on-one on how they can sit down and start relating to nature? And it may sound like a dumb question, but I hope it's not. I hope it's because there's people that just don't know. You know, there's people that don't know that a tree can communicate with them. You know, so how do we, you know, start it?
I gave the answer, and I'm going to give it again, okay? You walk down the street in the fall, and a great deal of the plants and the trees let off their seeds in the fall, or their fruits in the fall, like the ginkgo tree will let off that you know, that fruit in the fall. Instead of us taking that blower and blowing the stuff and putting it in a plastic bag, which is ridiculous, because we should be actually letting that sit on the ground and breaking down. That's the nutrients that plant needs for the next springtime. I made a real harsh statement, but it is instead of saying ridiculous, it is completely inefficient to do things that way. Instead of doing it that way, what we need to do is go around and pick up four or five different types of seeds and going home, getting a plastic bucket, you know, a Home Depot bucket or a, you know, joint compound bucket, and filling it with soil and putting those seeds in the ground and watering them and seeing what grows. And taking charts of it. That's right, getting a notebook and charting when you planted it, you know, how long it took to germinate, how quickly it's growing, and at the same time, touching it, putting your hands around it to see, to sense its breathing pattern. Okay, let me back up. All seeds are breathing. You can't have life from non-life. All seeds are breathing. They're taking in 2 units of oxygen. They're letting off 3 units of carbon dioxide. So the first thing that I recommend with my kids when I have my gardening, when I have my gardening clubs, is that the kids just sit and put the seed in their hand and start breathing and sensing the breathing pattern of the seed itself. And at some point, once you start to go into oscillation or resonance with that thing, you'll realize that you're breathing together. And you'll no longer think of this as some inanimate object or something separate, that it's obeying the same spiritual or cosmic laws that my body is and my consciousness is. In the springtime, a lot of plants let off their stuff in the springtime, and they'll drop to the ground and they'll germinate. So therefore, you know, instead of having the teenager come and mow it all down, you know, scoop up, you know, take a spoon, like my grandma Cindy would have got out there with her silver spoon, and she would have dug up those things and put each one in a Dixie cup and just put it on the windowsill and water them and see them grow. And, you know, these things grow very, very quickly. So, you know, these are pets as well, you know, and understanding that it used to be, when I was a kid, you know, people would walk down the street and they, you know, people I didn't even know. I'd walk past somebody's yard and they'd say, you know, I planted that tree back in 1927. Look at it now. It'd be 40 feet tall. Okay? Now, at least in New York City, we got these laws that you can't even plant a tree in front of your house. You have to call the city and you have to get that from them. But you can do it in your backyard. You can do it in your window. You can do it on your rooftop. You know, you start there. You start there, you know. You find out about earthworms. You know that the earthworm is burrowing through the ground. It's taking the soil into itself. It's putting nutrients into it, and also the hole or the tunnel that it's making is aerating the ground. This thing serves multiple functions, and these things are not bugs. Okay. They're creations. We all serve functions. And part of the panic button that we always press is because we're not connected to our function.
When you speak of function, is it true, and this is like one that's going on this, that you can go south of any oak tree and hit water?
Certainly.
Why is that? Is that they naturally grow on a water aquifer? Like, I'm in South Carolina. You know, they have those angel oaks here, you know, that, you know, like, beautiful trees. But it was a guy that's native here. He was like, you know how, where to dig your well? You know, and this is for the people who was like, when he was saying, just go south of an oak tree. Go 12 feet south of an oak tree and dig your well. You're going to hit water.
Once again, part of what he's describing is the concept of tessellation. And the concept of tessellation is that whenever you have anything from the plant kingdom growing, what you see above the ground, the pattern of the root system will be a mirror of that growing below the ground. So the tree naturally taps into a water system you know, that's below the ground, and it will pull the water to itself. So, you know, that's always a good marker. That's always a good marker in terms of knowing that where the plant is or the tree is, there's water close by. Now, of course, there are exceptions to this, and it's not so much that there is water, but if you have rapidly moving water underground, a lot of times the trees will grow away from that. So you'll actually see trees bending, and that tells you that that water is moving in a direction that's contrary to that particular plant. So you have to do some investigation. But once again, this is another example of another thing that we can start to develop, especially with ourselves, is to start doing dowsing. You know, whether you have a pendulum, I mean, you know, all these people talk to me about the new age, and, you know, I have my pendulum, and I'm trying to divine this and divine that. Well, you know, one of the most basic things that pendulums and dowsing equipment have been used for tens of thousands of years is discovering underground moving water. So, I mean, especially, you know.
It actually works. Like,
brother, don't even try that, okay?
No.
Does it actually work? I'm challenging you. See, this is where Western science comes in, because Western science says, does it work? And I'm telling you, it's not about the pendulum. It's about us. It's about us tapping in. The energy is coming through us and resonating with or oscillating with the energy below the ground. So it's not whether the pendulum works, it's whether we are tuning or working.
Okay.
You can't have separation. Separation is not real, what you would call metaphysical science. Separation is where you're saying that principle or that thing's over there and I'm over here. Nothing is like that. Remember I said everything in the universe has coupled oscillation. Everything in the universe has coupled oscillation. So, you know, does it work? It already has been working since, I hate to use the term, but the small poof, otherwise what the people call the Big Bang, okay? I only say that because it couldn't have been big and it couldn't have been a bang. There was no atom, so it couldn't have made a sound, okay? But, you know, since whatever that event was, okay, those things have been in effect. And we're not here to question whether it works or not. We're mostly here to remember that we're connected with that and to figure out how to best use that. I lived in the Midwest for the early part of my life, and I saw all kinds of people making their living dowsing. There's a dowsing association in every state in this nation. Every state has a dowsing association. They got magazines, which I recommend people go and read and try it out for themselves. Now, there's a word, I learned it, and I just can't remember what it is, which meant scientifically something could be valid, but it may not work for everyone. But that doesn't mean it's not working. So the thing is, what I'm saying is, just like I said before, it's up to us to investigate to find out what our role is. You know, if my thing is not dowsing, then that's for somebody else. I got to figure out what my thing is.
So now, let's go after you have found water. Let's say we dowse, we found water. You know, we got this settlement, and you know where we. I was alone while they got the concentration camps for the rest of the people and the guillotines and all of that stuff. But we got this settlement of 144,000 people. We need water. What would be the next thing that we would look for? You know, and let's look at, let's say it's September, so we know winter is coming. So what else would we look for immediately? So we say we got water, fire, wood, shelter. What would be the next step?
Okay, firewood, water.
Let's say you got water. We got to look at feeding the people. We got to look at shelter. What would you go next? Let me pick shelter. what would we immediately look for? Assign a bunch of group of people for shelter. To design what type of shelter for?
Brother, look, I can't answer your question the way you're asking it. Okay, I'm gonna go back to what I
said.
No, I'm gonna answer it. So I'm gonna go back to what I said in the beginning. Okay, planning of building the house takes as much, if not more, energy than the building of the house. Okay, if I got 144,000 people and it's September and I'm trying to figure out shelter, I'm already in disaster. Okay, the thing is, we gotta have a program. We gotta have a template. It's what they call modular living, meaning that we have to figure out where to start and how to add on efficiently to whatever it is that we're doing. So, as far as shelter is concerned, long before September, I'm so sorry that people don't get Disaster of the Week movie here, but long before September. And this is, okay, I'm going to answer it this way. Part of that 144,000, part of that group of 144,000 should be set aside for, say, a group of 24 people, 12 males and 12 females. And they should be assigned study the history of how people have housed and sheltered themselves. Okay? What I mean by that is people have lived in caves. People have lived in, the idea that, you know, people have lived in individual units. And other times, like in the Southwest, where they made a circular kiva, where the shape of it is semicircular, and you just carve the individual apartments or dwelling places and cooking places out of that shape, and you figure out the angle that the sun is coming at, because in the wintertime, the angle that the sun is coming at, even though the angle is low, it heats up the bottom of the kiva, and the heat rises and heats all of the apartments. In the summertime, because it's high, it cools that same environment, so everybody's apartment stays cool. Now, there's no central air. There's no Con Edison or whatever your power company is. Clever design. That comes with the preparing of the house, not, you know, getting a bunch of people together and suddenly realizing, what do I do? So I would first analyze, where are we going? What are the requirements? You want to have running water, because running water will absorb some of the